Good morning and welcome back to the second hour of Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Thanks very much for being here. Glad to have you with us. The producers for the program, Harriet Williamson, Travis Stansel, Henry Frayne is at the controls. Just let me mention very quickly that tomorrow morning in the first hour, we'll be talking about the founding of the United Nations with Stephen Schlesinger. He's director of the World Policy Institute at the New School University in Manhattan. He's authored a book on the subject titled Act of Creation. So we'll talk about that in the first hour. Hour number two, our guest will be Ronald Suny. He's professor of political science and history at the University of Chicago and will be here visiting the campus to speak. He's done a lot of writing about the issues of national identity and ethnic conflict, and that is what we will talk about tomorrow morning in hour number two. We are here weekday mornings from 10 until noon with 10 different topics every week, and we always welcome your questions and comments. This morning, in this part of Focus, we will be spending some time talking about Brazil, its politics, and maybe some economic issues. Earlier this year, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva became president. And when he took office, he laid out a very ambitious agenda for change in his country. He said he would like to create 10 million jobs in a country with one of the biggest gaps between rich and poor in the world. He promised to eliminate hunger. He also said that he would overhaul the country's tax and pension systems. We'll try to talk about some of these issues and talk about Brazil and its place not only in the world economy, but also in the economy of Latin America. And we have here in the studio with us as guest, Mauricio Ranz Barros. He is someone who is very much involved in politics in Brazil. He's a member of the Brazilian Congress, essentially. He's a federal deputy from the state of Pernambuco. He's also professor of law at the Federal University, Pernambuco. He, among other things, was very much involved in putting together these recent proposed changes to Brazil's Social Security law, something that proved to be rather controversial, and we'll get an update on how that effort has gone. He's here visiting the campus, and was good enough to come spend some time with us. And as we talk, of course, questions are welcome. 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line. That means anybody could call us. If it would be a long-distance call, use that number. That's 800-222-9455. At any point here, you're welcome to call. Just a couple of other details. Our guest has a PhD in political science from Oxford. He belongs to the Workers' Party. That is the same party of the president, and is a labor lawyer. And we're pleased to have him here. Thanks very much.
Yes, it's a great pleasure for me to talk to you, David. And I've come here for giving a paper at the university, invited by Professor Werner, who happens to be perhaps the most important Brazilianist, as we call in our country, the scholars concerned with Brazil. So I've come here to talk to you and to Werner at the University of Illinois. It's a pleasure for me.
The story of the current president is remarkable when you consider the fact that he started out on sort of on the bottom in Brazil, and from very humble origins, rose up through the trade unions movement, was very much involved in that, and of course now is the president of Brazil. What does the fact that he, given his background in his politics, the fact that he is now president, what does that tell you about Brazilian politics at this point?
I would say that President Lula perhaps is repeating what happened here 2 centuries ago with Abraham Lincoln, a very humble background, actually. He was born in my state, in the rural area of the state of Pernambuco. And during his childhood, he moved with his family, actually his mother, to São Paulo to try a better life. And there he became a metal worker. And in the early 80s, he managed to create both the National Trade Union, which is CUT, Central Única dos Trabalhadores. And at the same time, he managed to create with other trade union leaders, with some intellectuals, some people from the Catholic Church. So they gathered to create the Workers' Party as early as in the 80s. And After that, he ran 3 times for the presidency unsuccessfully. And this time, last year, he managed to get the Brazilian people for a platform of change. As you said at the beginning of the program, Dave, it is an ambitious program to change the social and economic profile of the country. Try to put on the agenda the issue of exclusion, of social exclusion. That's why one of his initial programs was No Hungry. We call Fome Zero. So try to put on the agenda the responsibilities that all the Brazilians have with those people who don't manage to eat. So he's trying to make a lot of changes, both at the economic front and at the social policies front.
Brazil is, it's certainly, it's the biggest country in Latin America. It's also the biggest economy in Latin America. And I know that a lot of people, certainly people in Brazil, feel that Brazil should be both the political and economic leader of Latin America. If it's not, why is it not?
I would say that historically, Brazil was very well concerned first with Portugal, then with Britain, and then with the United States, rather than trying to strengthen the links among the other Latin American countries. That's something that has been put on the agenda by President Lula. The foreign minister now is concerned with to link the countries in Latin America to have a word in the international negotiations against, for example, protectionism, try to make the economic relationships all over the world more fair.
Certainly the relationship between Brazil and the United States is an important one. I believe that it's the case that the United States is Brazil's biggest trading partner.
Yes, right? Definitely it is the first one. The second is China.
That recently, perhaps in part because the president of Brazil was not supportive of the U.S. war in Iraq, things have been maybe a little bit on the rocky side. Although, I think in an effort to try to improve relations, there was, I believe this was in June.
Yes, he came here to the United States, yes.
And I read somewhere that this was the biggest Brazilian delegation to come to the U.S. since World War II when the president met with Franklin Roosevelt. So yeah, perhaps that should tell you something
since
about
Roosevelt.
How important the government of Brazil thinks relations between the U.S. and Brazil are at this point. Can you talk about, from the Brazilian point of view, how Brazilians think about this relationship between the United States and Brazil?
Yes. First, we have to say that President Lula has been very cautious respecting the U.S. domestic politics. Mm-hmm. What he expressed as some differences with President Bush was in the international relations, particularly the question of war. I wouldn't say that President Lula was in favor of Iraq. He was in favor of another kind of solution, in favor of peace, in favor of some negotiations in the forum of the United Nations. But for us, Brazilian, not only for the President Lula, the United States is really very important. We do like to strengthen our relationships, and we like to explain to the United States that perhaps some change in the economic terms are necessary to both. Now the whole country is discussing the ALCA, Free Trade Area of Americas. And most of us are in favor of Brazil taking part in the Free Trade Area of Americas, but in other terms, because we do feel that there are some protectionism for the American agriculture, and we would like to free both the obstacles in the industrial area of the Brazilian market and in the agribusiness area of the American markets.
Well, just I think that President Lula was credited with leading a kind of a revolt among some of the participants at a meeting of the World Trade Organization in Cancun in September, and voicing these very same concerns that, you know, he's very concerned about the kind of protectionism that exists and the fact that particularly for agricultural products there's not a level playing field, and that he is concerned that farmers in Brazil are not getting to compete fairly, this is something that obviously is very important to him.
Yeah, that's very important because the Brazilian economy is very vulnerable to the external relationships. And we do feel that this is a problem for countries like Brazil, not only to Brazil, but for the whole poor countries in the world. So it's not a kind of rebellion. It's just to make some alliances with countries like China, India, South Africa, to have a bit more of bargain power, to democratically try to change the terms of the current economic relationships in the world. It is something that, for me, it would be for everybody.
Well, this, you know, the kind of countries that you mentioned, India, China, Brazil, are very large countries, very large economies, with, one would think, a great potential if they were working together. And it seems that President Lula is really positioned to emerge as a very important leader among some very large developing nations.
Yes, I'd say that perhaps his main leadership position in the world is the moral authority. He's trying to come to the international arena, not just say, look, we the Brazilians are poor, we need philanthropy. It's not his standpoint. What he says that we have a lot of exports and we have the biodiversity in Amazonia. We have a lot of very important points to mankind. And we are managing to stabilize our economy to be efficient. So we are becoming even more an efficient country. So we'd like to be recognized as that. And in addition to that, President Lula has managed to put the agenda of the poor people in the world. That's very important. He's doing Fome Zero, No Hungry, not only in Brazil, but he addressed the National Conference of the International Conference of the United Nations, and he urged the whole world to take the issue seriously.
Yes, he certainly has done that and talked very... It's very obvious that for him, social inequality is a very important issue, not only in Brazil, but everywhere.
The whole world, yes.
Maybe I'll just introduce very quickly, reintroduce our guest for this part of Focus 580. We're speaking with Mauricio Ranz Barros. He is a federal deputy, that is a member of the Congress of Brazil from the state of Pernambuco in Brazil. He's also professor of law at the Federal University of Pernambuco, and he's visiting here the campus and was good enough to come by and talk with us for a while. We're talking a bit about Brazil and issues in political, economic issues in Brazil, and questions, of course, are welcome. The number, if you're here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, 333-9455. We also have toll-free line. Go to anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. We do have a caller here to talk with here in Champaign County on our line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I was struck by Lula's... from his inaugural address, talking about how his judgment of what success would be everybody had three meals a day, and it struck me very similar to Aristide in Hades talking about having poverty with dignity, that he actually isn't setting his sights extremely high, but the expectations are extremely high, it seems to me, and. Regarding the free trade, one of the things, we're in an agricultural area, so the preoccupation is definitely with the subsidies that are driving peasants from the land in Mexico and probably all through South America because of subsidized corn going there. But and I do want to get to landless peasants, but the Singapore part of it, the negotiations that had successfully, I guess, gone ahead with Singapore, that allow for other non-trade issues to be attached to the FTAA were quite important in scuttling the negotiation. At least that's my understanding of it. That's a little bit complicated, but I at least wanted to note it. But as far as you are labor minister, I don't know if that includes in your portfolio the idea of the landless peasants. Now, a lot of the Brazilian economy is not particularly affected by trade, it seems to me. There's a lot of subsistence farming, a lot of not the globalization hasn't penetrated in a lot way, and there's a lot going on in this landless peasant with forcible land reform, basically. And I don't know if that's in your portfolio or whether you have anything to comment on it, but I think the point that there's a large fraction of Brazilian population that in no near term, even middle term, will see any benefits. It's a very much part of the first world part of the Brazilian economy. Can you talk about some of those points, if you would? Sorry, I haven't formulated much of a question.
Oh, yes, very clear, your points. What's your name, please, my friend?
Call me Pablo. I don't know.
Pablo.
We generally don't ask people for their names, but, you know, if people want to give them
Perhaps the use that I have in Brazil. Okay, Pablo, thank you very much for your question. I do think that you made a very important point. The agricultural life of the Brazilian economy is split. On one side, we have a very modern export agribusiness. So we managed this year to diversify our markets. We are among the first producers, exporters, mainly exporters of something like sugar, coffee, cacao, soya beans. And also we are exporting some industrial products, say, for example, jets. Professor Venebe was telling my brother and myself yesterday that the flights from Champaign to Chicago, most of them are done with Brazilian jatos produced by Embraer, a Brazilian company. So we are exporting something like jets, and also the steel production of Brazil is very strong, and it resents a lot of some protectionism. But your point, Pablo, is that we have two sides in Brazilian agriculture. One is agribusiness, who is doing very well. Now we have a trade surplus of $22 billion, which for our standards are very high. And on the other hand, we have the subsistence agriculture. For example, the current budget has assigned to the subsistence agriculture as much as 5.4 billions of reais. The relation is $1 buys 3 reais. So 5.4 billions are now invested by the Brazilian government in the subsistence agriculture. And in addition to that, we have a very strong quest and commitment of President Lula and our party, the Workers' Party. We have relationships with the social movement. We have a strong commitment with land reform. But our point is that it's not a matter just to give a piece of land to the peasants. We have to give the land, but in addition, we have to provide them with assistance, with seeds, with the way to sell the production. So the strategy that has been pursued by President Lula is, before giving the piece of land, prepare this kind of help to the peasant in his or her future land. So it's a matter not just to give the land, but try to organize them in cooperatives so as to enable them to be competitive. So it's a kind of combination between the subsistence agriculture, which tends to increase after the land reform, combining with the agribusiness, which has been very aggressive in the international markets.
Again, it's not your portfolio, but what kind of expansion, percentage increase of this kind of low-level agricultural credit and extension services has there been under Lula?
Yes, the budget has more than doubled. It was an increase of 130% for subsistence agriculture. And now he is planning to give land to something like 60,000 peasants in the next 10 or 12 months.
Do you have anything to say about this other business, about the non-trade related cash control, export, the other things that are the investment parts of the FTAA that the U.S. was trying to attach to WTO and probably will try to. Chile indeed has accepted a lot of these so-called Singapore protocols, whatever you want to call them. I don't know. And I'll hang up and listen and encourage someone else to call. Thanks.
Oh, Pablo, I'm afraid I'm not very well concerned with this Singapore issue, but I'd like to say to you that, okay, we are aware of that the free trade area is not a matter of industry and agriculture. That is the matter of patent, a lot of issues that we'd like to change a bit the current terms. So we'd like to go to the free trade area, but allowing for some peculiarities of the particular of the Latin American economies, which are in a stage of less development than the American. So we have to account for this imbalance of situations. Mm.
All right, let's talk with someone in Urbana next, line number two. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Will your guest address what I heard? I don't know if it's true. Is Brazil one of those countries in which if a politician is found to be corrupt while in office, he cannot be prosecuted? Is that true?
No, fortunately, that's not true. Everybody can be prosecuted. What happens is that someone that has committed some kind of crime, say an offense to the honor of someone else, in the exertion of his mandate, in the completion of his attributions, to be prosecuted, one has to prosecute him, one has to get an authorization of the legislative branch.
You mean the judiciary cannot operate independently?
No, the judiciary can operate, but in certain matters, to protect the freedom in the exercise of the representation, of the popular representation, the judiciary to start the prosecution has to get an authorization. But it's quite clear, for example, what happened with former President Collor. He was a corrupted guy.
Uh-huh.
And after 2 years, he was impeached.
Okay.
So he was voted out of the job.
One other issue, very different from the first one. How bad is the AIDS problem in Brazil?
You made a very important point for me. We have just voted, passing a piece of legislation in the parliament regarding what we call Estatuto do Idoso, the law to protect the aged people. So it's becoming an issue, very important, because the life expectancy as here in Brazil as well has increased. So we are very well concerned with provide good quality of life to the good age, as I like to call. It's a very important issue, but we have a lot to do.
I think you misheard me, sir.
Sorry.
Referred to the disease of HIV/AIDS.
Ah, sorry. AIDS. Okay, AIDS. AIDS. Okay, Brazil certainly has one of the most successful programs to combat the disease. We are producing some of the medicines to combat it, and we have very good figures of this successful strategy. It has been recognized all over the world, even with OMS, the health World Organization.
Okay. Again, another caller here. This is Belgium, over by Danville on our line number four. Hello.
Hello. I'd like to hear your guest opinion on the situation, the destruction of the ecosystem in Brazil. Now, not that the United States is any example to follow, or the fact that we make the bulldozers that knock it down, but it seems though Brazil shouldn't be penalized for trying to preserve a natural resource for all of us, but is there some help in that area?
I agree with you. I thank you your consciousness about that. We have the rainforest. We have perhaps the biggest or the largest biodiversity mm-hmm. of the world, and we have the obligation to protect that on behalf of the whole mankind. But to get the conditions of that, I think that we have to change the international economic terms of relationships. It's a matter that is very linked with the World Trade Organization, the Cancun negotiations, the Group of 21. So we have to change the terms to make them more equal. And it will empower countries like Brazil to take more care of the environment. But even if we don't manage to get a better terms in the international relationships, we feel obliged to do that. For example, President Lula has strengthened the Ministry of the Environment, and he appointed to be the head, the minister, one of the leading figures in the fight for the environment, who is Marina Silva, who is a former militant in the environment. He belongs to the Amazon region. He was a friend of the famous Chico Mendes, who was killed because of his fight defending the rainforest. And Marina Silva, the current minister of the environment, is one of those fighters. She's very concerned, and Lula now has this consciousness that we have to take care of the environment. You are quite right in addressing the issue.
Thank you very much, sir.
Right, Thank you.
We are about at our midpoint here, a little bit past the midpoint. I think perhaps I should introduce again our guest for anyone who might happen to have been just tuned in here recently. We're speaking with Mauricio Ranz Barros. He is a federal deputy from the state of Pernambuco in Brazil. So he's a member of the Brazilian Congress. He's also professor of law at the Federal University of Pernambuco. He has a PhD in political science from Oxford. He's a labor lawyer. He belongs to the Workers' Party. That is the same party of the president. He's the author of a book titled Labor Relations and the New Unionism in Brazil, and is here visiting the campus of the University of Illinois. We're talking here a little bit about Brazil politics, economics, and if people have questions, they are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Another caller here, line one in Urbana. Hello.
Yeah, I read that the movement of landless rural workers, sometimes referred to as the MST,
yes,
that it settled as many as 1 million people over the last, few years or so. That's pretty remarkable.
Really?
That kind of alludes to what the first caller was talking about. That's really an amazing thing, and it's something so many Latin American countries have aspired to and not been able to do. So it's amazing that Brazil did. I have a couple of questions. One is that they're a little bit touchy, but I'll try them anyway. One is that back in 1996, 1997. General Wesley Clark was the commander of the U.S. Southern Command in Panama, and it was said that he was quite difficult to get along with, and that Latin American officials from Brazil, Argentina, and Chile refused to be bullied by him. It'd be a touchy thing for you to talk about, but I was just curious if you could in some way, if you happen to have any knowledge of the general opinion of General Wesley Clark in Brazil.
Well, I'm afraid I wouldn't have much to say about that of General Clark. It is something related to the military dictatorship, where some generals and some people from the army were trained in Panama to make the repression within the countries. That, like, is it that you are talking to?
Well, they didn't really get the article I was reading wasn't very specific as to what it was, except that he was, you know, being kind of overbearing and pushy with the people he talked to. But let me ask you another question then.
Okay, thank you.
I understand that in Rio de Janeiro,
yes,
another recent article, this time by Greg Pallas, who's a well-known a journalist here and in Britain, he just wrote an article saying that Houston Industries, along with some French partners, took over the electric company in Rio de Janeiro.
Yes, the former Light. Yes, the name of the company. Yes, please okay. Go ahead. Yeah.
And they fired workers, they raised prices, and that now people are calling it, instead of Rio de Janeiro, they're calling it Rio Dark because the light keeps going off. And I'm just curious if that's true. I mean, is it still pretty bad?
Yes, things are improving a bit because the new government is more concerned with regulation. What happens with the privatization program? Yes, it was that the previous government first sold the companies without a good scheme of regulation, a framework of regulation. So that has been recognized, and the current government is concerned with develop this framework of regulation to prevent some problems, as like one with Light in Rio de Janeiro. And it has happened a lot. A lot of workers have been fired. So it was something that they made profits very quickly, sometimes at the expenses of the employees. And now I think this is because of the lack of regulation. Now we are trying to amend, to correct this trouble.
Well, I hope you have luck with that. We have troubles holding back the Texans ourselves.
Ah, really? Here in Texas?
No, I mean in the country in general.
In the country in general, yeah.
And one last question. I read that there's a recent book called Naked Tropics.
Naked Tropics.
Yeah, it's current book. And I read a short review of it. And it said that Thomas Jefferson, one of our founding fathers,
yes,
had a friendship with the Portuguese intellectual Abbe José Correa de Serra. And he called him the most learned man I have met in any country.
Really?
Yeah.
That's great. I'm glad to hear it.
But I don't know a thing about this fellow. Do you happen to know much about him? Or?
What's his name, please? Abbe Correa de Serra?
Uh-huh.
Oh, I'm afraid. Is he a Portuguese? Perhaps he's a Portuguese. Are you sure that he's a Brazilian? He was a Brazilian, yeah.
That's a good point. I'm not sure.
But I'll look for it. I'm glad to hear it. I will look for him because I can't record of his name. Abbe Correa de Serra.
I think he is Brazilian because his book's about Brazil. But I thought I'd run that by you anyway.
I will look for him.
Okay.
But it's not so famous because otherwise I would record him. I would recall him.
All right.
Thank
you very much for your questions.
Caller on a cell phone here, line number 2. Hello.
Hello. The worst place to be is on a cell phone after that previous caller. My question has to do with racial or social policy issues in Brazil. I understand, even though my president once didn't, that more blacks live in Brazil than any country outside of Africa.
That's kind. Brazil is the second largest black population in the world.
My question
after only Nigeria.
Yeah.
My question to you is, apart from Pelé, who was an outstanding black athlete from Brazil, what is racism as entrenched in Brazil against black Brazilians as it sometimes has been and still is to some degree in the United States?
Good question. Some people say that Brazil has not racism. I entirely disagree with this assessment. I think that Brazilian population, black population, is the second in the world, losing only to Nigeria, as I said, and there is a lot of racism in Brazil. If you take the figures, for example, people in the university, the levels of wage, the opportunities to the black people, and also the jokes, the cultural attitude of the country. Yes, there is, I'm absolutely sure to assert this. Unfortunately, there is a lot of racism in Brazil. And President Lula is quite aware of that. And he created a kind of ministry, a special secretary with the status of a ministry, just to promote equal racial relations. It is something that has been urged to be a preoccupation, to be a question in all the public policies of the country. And also, in addition to that, we are about to pass a law, an affirmative action reserving some places at the universities to the black people, as you had here. And fortunately, you, as a country, are now in a position to overcome that. But well, anyway, in a part of U.S. history, as far as I know, it was very important to have a more assertive policy of quotas in the university, for example. That's something that we are doing in Brazil. We have a couple of state universities. We already have a policy of quotas, an affirmative action to promote equality in racial terms, and we are trying to spread it to the whole country.
You think you're going to be successful?
I don't think that only affirmative action is enough to overcome such an entrenched attitude in the Brazilian culture, but it will help, I believe.
Okay, well, I hope you are more successful in my estimation
than
you have been in the United States, and I hope you don't find yourself experiencing backlash as we currently are for remedial programs designed to eradicate the effects of past and ongoing discrimination against black citizens in this country. Good luck to you.
Okay, good luck. Thank you for your question.
Thanks for the call. We'll just keep going here. We have another caller on line 3 in Champaign. Hello.
Hi, my name is Walter. How are you doing?
Good. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, my question is with regards to the recent social unrest and destabilization of the neighboring country, Bolivia.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you see Brazil and Lula's role in neighboring countries as a regional power there? How do you see the role of Brazil in helping with some of these problems? Thank you.
Oh, thank you for your call. That's a very good question. The attitude of the Brazilian government is one of helping democracy. So what we'd like to see in all the Latin American countries is that the way out for the crisis is channeled through the democratic institutions. That's, for example, the attitude of President Lula regarding Venezuela, which is a split country, and he's urging all the solutions to be conducted under the marks of democracy, under the rules of the democratic institutions of the country. So as far as for Bolivia, the same attitude will be tried by the government of President Lula. Try to help the Bolivians to find out a democratic solution, respect the institutions.
All right, I hope that gets at the question of the caller. We'll go to line number 1 for someone in Urbana. Hello.
Yeah, hi, good morning. This is a great conversation. I was wondering if your guest could just talk a little bit about the fact that it seems like Lula's had to position himself in a very difficult fashion. I mean, he wants to sort of bring up the standards of living for most of his people, but if he does that, then he runs against the Washington consensus, and it makes him doesn't give him a lot of breathing room to deal with the U.S. and the IMF and the WTO. And so I was wondering if your guest could just quickly talk about like what his general plan is for dealing with that, because the policies that I think most of the folks in Brazil want sort of run contradictory to what certainly what the folks in Washington want, but also some of what the folks in these international institutions want as well. So thanks.
Okay.
Thank you for your call. I do agree that the main concern of President Lula is to improve the standards of living of the people. As David has said at the beginning of the program, Brazil perhaps is the third or the fourth worst Gini coefficient all over the world. We lose in inequality only to countries like Sierra Leone, Botswana, and South Africa.
That we're talking about the spread between the rich people and the poor people.
Yes, David has made this point. It's amazing, the gap.
Yeah.
So we have very modern sectors of society, but we have very a lot of millions of Brazilians excluded. We reckon that something like 22 million Brazilians are classified as indigents. And below the poverty line, we could say that perhaps we are as many as 53 million people. So that's the main concern of the left-wing government of President Lula. We have a conception of what is being left-wing nowadays. For us, it is something like very different from support the bureaucratic socialism that was experimented in the East, Europe, of, in the East Europe. For us to be a socialist, to be a left wing nowadays, is to be concerned with three main values. First, equality. Not absolutely equality, but at least equality of opportunities for everybody. Second, the value of solidarity. Not egoism, but a bit of altruism that must be developed in mankind. And third, the radicalization of democracy. The deepen of political participation, of civic culture of the country. So, participation, democratic participation. Those three values are at the very core of our political platform. But of course, this is so general an agenda. We have to concentrate to make those values effective. And what we are doing now, what is President Lula doing now? At the first point, he took the Brazilian economy, which was in a huge crisis. We are almost losing control. For example, inflation was coming back. The US dollar, the exchange rate was going very high. So a lot of problems at the end of the last government. When Lula took office, he managed to establish a very competent, a very responsible economic policy. So now he still is trying to make some efforts at monetary policy. So he was obliged to maintain the interest rate a bit high. Now it has started to decline. And in addition to that, he is very concerned not only with monetary policy, but with fiscal policies to correct the disequilibrium of the Brazilian spending. So he's controlling public spending. And with this successful economic policy, now he's managed to prepare the country to grow. So the expectation is that in the coming year, the Brazilian economy will start recovering, and we are forecasting an increase of 3 or 4% of real GDP. So it will allow to put Brazil in another direction, in the direction that managed to stabilize the economy. The country will be in the condition to develop social policies and investments in infrastructure. In other words, to promote a sustainable process of growth with combat to inequalities.
We talked near the beginning of the program about the fact that shortly after he was inaugurated, the president said, one of the first things that I want to do is deal with hunger. And he said, I would like to end hunger in the country. And he announced this plan to provide cash payments to people so that they would then be able to buy food, and committed something like $500 million of government money. And interestingly enough, also made the pitch to wealthy Brazilians to contribute to this fund, too. So and it has begun, and the idea is that by the end of the year, the whole thing would be fully in place. We're not talking about a lot of money. I read that it was something like for a monthly payment of U.S. $15, which seems like, you know, to us is not a lot of money.
For the U.S. it's
not
very low.
But I'm just, you know, overall, you're talking about a country the size of Brazil and a problem the size. Is it really doable? And how long can you do that? I know in the long run, would he like to have his people working so that wouldn't be necessary? But the question is, you know, how long do you think that you would have to continue to maintain a program like this?
Yes, you are quite right. It's just a temporary program. And it's not a program just to give some money to the people, but the method is very important as well. What's been done is that in every local community has been created a bipartisan committee with some people representing the state agencies and the other people representing the community, the organizations who act in those communities. So it's a process of creating the conditions to free those people in order that in a near future they won't need the help of the state. So it's developing qualification programs, developing some agricultural initiatives, some cooperatives, something like that in order to get rid of the assistance. But now I don't think that it would be correct to say that, okay, we will finish it in 4 years' time. Mm-hmm. It's very early to say that.
One other thing I did, and we're almost out of time, but I'm interested in hearing about just for a moment, just because I've read so much about this, is the pension reform issue.
Yeah.
Because the problem initially was that the feeling was that the country simply couldn't afford it as the way it was way it was structured. And so people started talking about things like, well, we might have to raise the retirement age, we might have to cap benefits, we might have to tax the benefits. And there are a lot of people in the public sector who were very unhappy, some of them in the president's own party and your own party. There was a strike, at least one that I remember reading about over the summer. A lot of people were really unhappy about this. Has there been a final plan announced? Do you know what it is you're going to do?
Yes. That's fine, Dave. Congratulations. You are very well informed, very light. That's the point. In order to stabilize the economy, in order to have a sound fiscal policy, Lula had to tackle the issue of social security reform. Hmm. As you know, a country like Brazil can't afford people retiring as early as, say, 53 years old for men, 48 years old for ladies. So it's really too early. So this is one of the points of the reform that has just been passed. Another one, as you said, was taxing the benefits over 1,400 reais. You divide per three to get this amount of resources in dollar. So people who earns a benefit above that limit will be taxed on 11% to make the system of the civil servant's social security more sustainable. So in the interest of the civil servants themselves, and then in the interest of the whole society, that will take a bit of money to another political to another policies, mm-hmm. like habitation, housing, sanitations, etc.
Yeah. So the legislature did actually pass this?
Yes, I was the reporter, the federal deputy in charge of writing the report on the social security reform. And we managed in the low chamber to pass the law. Now the pass is about to be passed in the Senate, and certainly it will, because all the agreements has already been done. And this obstacle to the development of the country has been superseded with the social security reform. You have just to bear in mind that the previous government of Fernando Henrique Cardoso tried this during his 2 terms, 8 years trying to do that. President Lula managed to do through deal, through negotiations, to explanation to the people, not just imposing his opposition, but being prepared to concede and to make negotiations. That's why he succeeded in passing the reform.
We will have to stop because we've used the time. And again, I want to say thanks to our guest, Mauricio Ranz Barros. He is a federal deputy from the state of Pernambuco in Brazil, a member of the Brazilian Congress. He's also professor of law at the Federal University of Pernambuco. And thank you very much.
Thank you very much. It was a great pleasure to talk to you.